The following recording is offered by the Village Zendo. For more information, please visit villagezendo.org.
So, thank you and hello, everybody. I'm glad to see you all here tonight. So, the last and only other time that I have given a Dharma talk was at my Shuso Hosen on March 8th. And that first Dharma talk was intensely in person. As New York was rapidly becoming aware of a whole new reality, the Sangha came together to support me, for which I'm deeply grateful. Miraculously, it seems no one got sick at that event, although we've all been so deeply impacted in these months since. A few days after the Shuso Hosen, the Village Zendo went virtual. And since that moment, the Zendo has led the way in expressing and sustaining the virtual Sangha. In Anga, we're studying Dogen's The Painting of a Rice Cake and approaching this from so many angles. It's not about solidifying a concept of painting or rice cake or setting up an opposition between representation and the real. Last Saturday, Ryo Roshi talked about the painting of a rice cake as expressing the hunger of practice, a dynamism, a way to return endlessly to practice living itself. It wasn't so much about painting itself, he suggested. Painting is just one way among many to talk about it, one way among many that Dogen talks about it. During Anga, we've explored painting your life and being painted by your life. We're talking about true expression and life as practice. But I can't seem to let go of this idea of painting itself in the text of The Painting of a Rice Cake. With its focus on image making. I keep thinking of it as touching upon virtuality in this moment. In the 13th century culture of Dogen's time, painting was a primary medium of expression and communication, a way to express one's relationships to real things like rice cakes. Here and now, we are using virtual media to express and communicate. As access to everyday spaces has dropped away, the Sangha and some of our jobs and activities have transitioned fairly seamlessly to virtual space. We may be finding ourselves more adept at virtual life than we could have imagined. Here we are in virtual session, in virtual Sangha, practicing together. In virtual space. We're engaged in the practice of true expression using the virtual tools of our time. I'm feeling the importance of this virtual channel of true expression with its limitations and advantages. I've been suffering through this time from a feeling of not being able to focus. One problem is I'm without the spatial boundaries that used to organize my life. Driving to and from my job in Philadelphia once a week and having that time to integrate and prepare and that distinct separation between home and work. The spatial separation of our son, Solomon, leaving for school each day and knowing he'd be spending the day engaged with teachers and classmates. Or carving out time to attend Zazen Kai or Sesshin and immersing fully in that dedicated space away from home. Or visiting loved ones by traveling, spending time, and then leaving. These separate spaces have their own rituals of transition. Now sitting at home and Zooming, these spaces overlap with new virtual boundaries separating and containing worlds. We log on, we log off. It can be challenging to wrap your mind around these overlapping spaces in the course of a day. The Zoom fatigue we experience is partly this new demand to mentally and emotionally organize spaces of activity, suddenly without the transitions and without physical contact. One of the most painful Zoom experiences I've had was attending the funeral of our adopted son's sister, along with witnessing devastation being experienced by her family. The distance of Zooming in was excruciating. We were just too separate. Sometimes this integration of virtual contact just breaks down. I'm also having trouble focusing as I face the oncoming school year. I need to be prepared to teach and conduct everything virtually in a few weeks. I'm guardedly excited by the prospect of virtual teaching. I believe it's possible to translate the classroom experience into a live, connected, and productive virtual space. At the same time, I'm daunted. I'm working to prepare a detailed multimedia course package, practically automated, ready to go, and I'm having trouble achieving what I have in mind. I've taught the course many times, but now I have to break interactions out into constituent parts, deciding what should happen asynchronously and what should happen live, and how it all makes use of the tools in the virtual courseware. Since March, I've been engaged in many discussions about the impact of the pandemic on school. There's been a 12-year-old sitting on the floor at his laptop, 10 feet away from me, engaging in the last 3 months of seventh grade. I myself was on my laptop for 7 weeks in March and April as our classes went virtual, and we improvised online school with no preparation. Our plans for a physical exhibition of media installations at the end of the year were shut down. The curriculum of our class became virtual instead, literally, as we shifted to working online, building 3D worlds, a fully online medium that gave us a virtual workshop to connect in. But once school ended, in fact, it didn't end at all, as it usually does each May. My department and school segued immediately to engaging in discussions of virtual school, virtual media production, virtual classrooms. The faculty was suddenly required to take workshops in virtual teaching and learning, hours of workshops. I've learned some amazing tools and techniques for staying connected with students and supporting the connections between them. Ways of making the content more three-dimensional and assignments, more of a dialogue. Achieving a real virtual connection is about striving to achieve a sense of presence at a distance, a sense of expression, speaking and listening, and using the expressive tools as well as virtual expressive tools, the usual expressive tools that we know, in addition to virtual expressive tools. Virtual connection brings the process of expression into sharp focus. The amount of communication that happens in someone's presence happens on multiple levels of consciousness, including physical experience, which is huge. When you collapse it into virtual contact, it has to be more direct. Communication goes from implicit to explicit. You have to go right to the heart of what needs to happen. All those levels of expression have to be put into words, a lot more. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, presented to the camera and microphone. As I engaged in hours of workshops, I was also participating in the Zendo online. They felt like parallel tracks to me, one exploring the virtual classroom, the other embodying virtual Sangha. Learning these techniques for the virtual classroom while experiencing the way the Zendo has sustained a powerful community connection, one a toolbox for teaching, the other a live space of daily presence, has opened up a community to people near and far, some who wouldn't be able to participate otherwise. And one really lovely manifestation of that has been the inclusion of my partner sitting with us more often and listening to talks and being more part of the Sangha, something that I've been wanting to happen for years. One example of using virtual tools is when we started out with Bokushu leading the online Sangha in chanting. The vibrant voice of our Eno had to stand in for the group. Then Ryugen had the brilliant idea to recreate the sounds of the Sangha chanting, asking Sangha members to record their chanting separately and mixing it into a file for Bokushu to play back when he chants. We've since acclimated to this virtual Sangha of chanting. Its virtuality made our chanting more real, connected to remembered experiences. The virtual connection is made so much richer when we're engaging everything we know about embodied communication and skillfully bringing it into the hyper-focused plane of the Zoom connection. I've been glad for the instruction in online teaching and learning. At the same time, there's an underlying note of desperation in it. How do we create connection, community, collaboration in a virtual classroom? How do we replace the space of media production, hands-on learning of equipment, when sharing equipment is now dangerous? There's much underlying this desperation. What are the economic repercussions of the university losing students? What are students losing themselves in this crucial moment of their mental, emotional, professional development? Given skyrocketing tuition, is the value of college depleted by becoming virtual? There's fear that the painting is not the real thing and does not satisfy hunger. At the same time, there are some amazing benefits that have showed up already during this time of virtual school in COVID-19. Part of the shift has been the introduction of a level of care into the academic discussion that wasn't there before. In March, with the sudden shift to online, it soon became clear that the university needs to take care of students in order to keep the student body intact, to keep the whole show running. How to support students who've lost the resources of the university suddenly, sent home to less than optimal learning environments, perhaps without access to technology, physical and mental health care, sharing the physical space with family, younger siblings, parents working from home, subject to multiple demands at home. As a teacher, I and many of my colleagues have tended to be more involved in this kind of care of students. But it was always something we did on our own time, under the radar, perhaps considered the kind of caretaking that women do, perhaps considered unprofessional, criticized even, not having good boundaries in an academic setting. In March and April, it was becoming clear that the university might lose in high numbers. This economic issue translated, cynically or not, to a newly articulated concern for student welfare. We received messages at the dean's office encouraging us to email or even call individual students weekly or more to maintain contact. We were given the okay to have computers shipped to students living with their families. Grading included a pass-fail option. The school engaged in a concerted effort to support students through to a successful completion of the semester. Similar scenes played out at schools across the country. This critical shift of institutional attention to issues of care, well-being of students, also extended to chipping away at the status quo in other ways as well. In response to anti-racism protests that erupted at the end of May, a faculty meeting was called, and everyone showed up, virtually from all corners of the world. Never ever before had 60 teachers attended a meeting in the middle of the summer. For better or worse, we have all been together all summer, virtually for the first time ever, inhabiting the on-screen image, painting an engagement, really engaged. A level of sustained attention not only to student well-being during university shutdown, but to the critical shifts taking place during the pandemic, attention to racism and white privilege. In July, the graduate student letter to faculty articulating the problems of racism and anti-racist initiatives, students' perspectives, and demanding changes in the department. Of course, this virtual convergence around anti-racism does not satisfy the work for anti-racism. It's amazing that these meetings are taking place with the sincere hunger of the participants concentrated in this virtual moment of anti-racism. But of course, the hunger is not satisfied and continues urgently. What a relief for these things to come out and be articulated and talked about. The painting of that rice cake continue to happen. Where will it go from here? To be honest, it's been hard during a virtual academic connection without a break. It's been crucial to have the Village Zendo virtual sangha to return to, the spacious painting of and being painted by sangha. We've been painted by deep listening in jazz history, painted by amazing talks, painting and being painted by video, painted with sutra calligraphy. In the thing of a rice cake, Dogen says, "What is it that thus comes? It is saying, I am always intimate with this, investigated in this way. Here together in this virtual space, how are we staying always intimate with this kinning, this painting? How are we investigating it virtually together?"